Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Later on in the show, Sid Lowe will be here to talk about another poor result for Barcelona. Craig Burley, meanwhile, in the studio with me. Stuart Robson with us. And look at the effort that Shaka Hislop's really made here for today's show as we kick things off in the Premier League. Manchester United with the latest of wins against Wolves. Marcus Rashford's late deflected effort, giving Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's side all 3 points. What an end to the year for them then. Second in the table. Just 2 points off Liverpool at the top, Craig. It's a bit different than 33 points.
But what?
33 points. That's what you will get banging on about, wasn't it, all summer? That was the difference between United and Liverpool.
66
points.
I want to deal with it at the end of the season. We're not even halfway through yet. Look, they've done well up to now. We were just going to sit and talk about how bad that game was again, along with many, many other games. The difference between these two sides, I thought United didn't play great. Wolves had to make a lot of changes. Their squad's a bit threadbare. The difference was a lucky goal at the end from Marcus Rashford with a deflection, and Wolves missing their best player in Raul Jimenez, because when they got it wide, quite a few occasions in the second half, Wolves, they just didn't put the ball in the box because they had nobody in there, or they had a lack of people in there. We saw João Moutinho getting himself in there at one point on the end of a header that never came close. He's 5'8" or thereabouts. So that's what they missed. For United, it was about persistence. Mm-hmm. And Rashford got his goal. I don't expect him to be in that place at the end of the season, and don't say first. I don't expect Leicester to be there, who are a point behind them. I don't expect Everton to be there, who are a point behind them. I don't expect Aston Villa, who have got a game in hand and could be a point behind them, to be there, because I think City and Liverpool will kick on in the second half. But they've given themselves an opportunity. But I don't think you can keep going through the season with that amount of luck to win games and be good enough to win this Premier League.
Robbo, how much credit does Solskjaer get for what United have done over the last couple of months?
Well, I would say today he shouldn't take any credit, because I think he made it hard for Manchester United. As soon as the team was set up and the way Wolves were set up, I'm screaming at the telly, you've got to play Rashford in between the right wing back and the right centre half and threaten him behind. Greenwood doing the same down the other side. Get the wing backs going much, much deeper. Then you can get it wide and get crosses into the box. You had 3 versus 3 in the box. Cavani was good in the box. And then the midfield players could dominate the game. He didn't do that. And it wasn't a surprise when the one time they did score late on was when a ball got played over the top and Rashford played in between the wing back and the centre half. He should have been doing that after 5 minutes. And then Manchester United have won the game comfortably. He took too long to get the tactics across.
Shaka, any love for Solskjaer?
Yeah, listen, I don't mind giving Solskjaer love at all. Listen, when United weren't playing well and not looking anything like what we expect Manchester United to look like, I am happy to give him a hard time then, to throw the blame at his doorstep. When you go on the kind of run that United have now gone on, even when you do win ugly, whether they deserve to or not, sometimes you have to take some of that credit. He's had to rotate his squad, as everybody has, given the number of games, and on the day, Greenwood did absolutely nothing before he was taken off. And at times when you play Pogba and Matic in midfield, those two sit very deep and just in front of the back four. Pogba doesn't get forward enough. And sometimes it stutters and it starts. You take that, given the season that we're having and everybody's having to contend with, not playing well, having a few passengers, and then all of a sudden grabbing all 3 points at the very end against a very good Wolves team, even despite the changes that they've had to contend with.
It was a very young Wolves team as well. They had a couple of guys making Premier League debuts, mm-hmm. as I mentioned, and they were decent, but they lacked a cutting edge, and that was the difference. They went back to your back three. They've got away from that quite a lot this season, I think, maybe because Doherty has gone to Spurs and Nuno Espirito Santos is trying things, hasn't really worked for him. Personnel changes, went back to your back three. There wasn't a great deal between the sides, and Wolves are sat in 12th in the Premier League table. That's kind of where we are this season. But you and I were talking about it. I think the bigger picture here is, where's the enjoyment in watching all these games with tired players, with 0-0s, a bulky 0-0s again today? Okay, Leeds were the anomaly. Yesterday, a couple of 1-1s. Game's been called off because of COVID. That's only going to increase when you hear the news out of City, you hear the news out of Sheffield United. The players are knackered. All we keep hearing is, in the UK, is tradition. How about modernisation? And I understand this season's more difficult than any other season. And there's a Euro starting in the 11th of June, I believe it is. And that's problematic for a lot of the leagues. But with all the COVID happening and the way these players are, they're going to have to take a break. And they're going to have to look at it next year and say, let's forget about this tradition, right? How about modernisation? Tradition used to be 4-4-2. Two big Stratton centre-halves that couldn't run but could head the ball. Two up front. That was tradition, but the game's changed. Mm. Players are all quicker. They're all fitter. They're having to be asked to play more games. And I just think it's continuing to be detrimental to the Premier League, even though fans, and there's no fans at the game, they'll say, oh, we love Boxing Day and all these festive holiday games, and it's that's what we do in England. Well, that doesn't make it right. It's an entertainment business as well. And you just look at these games, most of them, not all, Dan, most of them, and this one included, and you go, oh, I've seen a quicker game on the training ground. Yeah. And it's taken away from the product of what the Premier League believes, not my words, but what they believe is the best product in the sport that we watch and cover. They think it's the best product on the planet. That's their opinion. And by shoehorning these games in every year, I think it's to the detriment of the product.
And that was epitomised by the game that we saw earlier today as well, Brighton against Arsenal. Yep. And we do, Robert, we talk about the Premier League as kind of being the box office league, yet we've seen a lot of these games. We saw it in that match today, and Arsenal getting that win, key for them, obviously, keeping a bit of momentum going after that victory against Chelsea. But from someone who watches a lot of football all around the world, there is a real distinct lack of quality at the moment, isn't there?
There's a distinct lack of quality, and I agree 100% with what Craig's talking about. Players tired, playing too many games, but the coaches have got to take some responsibility. I'm watching football now, and I see players and teams not understanding what the idea of the game is. The idea of the game is to pass it forward, to run forward, to score goals. Too many teams, and Brighton did it from the first minute, passed it and passed it and passed it. They were better than Arsenal in terms of passing it. No penetration whatsoever. I couldn't see when Arsenal were trying to play out from back. What were they trying to do? How are they trying to get it into the front areas? The only reason they won the game, because two young players in the second half went past their men in 1v1 situations. Saka did it on two or three occasions. Brilliant skill in 1v1 situations. Pace to running behind a very slow left-back or left-sided centre-half in Burn. And Emil Rose-Smith did it a couple of times when he played 1-2 around the opponent. Apart from that, the football over those two games was pathetic in terms of the attitude to pass it forward, in terms of the attitude of the players to make forward runs. And that must come down to what the coaches are asking them to do.
So just reminding, Arsenal with that 1-0 win, Lacazette coming off the bench, Saka with the assist. We talk about quality, Shaq. Saka seems the only one from Arsenal who you feel can provide that spark, and that's exactly what he did today.
Yeah, Saka, and I thought Martinelli is another of Arsenal's bright spots. And that being said, as much as I agree entirely with everything that Craig and Robbo just said, I don't think the fixture pileup had much to do with how poor Arsenal Brighton were. Brighton are a team that are hoping to stay up and probably exceeding some of their own expectations. And as I look at Arsenal, I can't believe how average so many of those players are. You mentioned Saka, I mentioned Martinelli. Aubameyang, we know, can be an incredible talent, incredible goal scorer. He's having a tough time, whether that's down to the fixtures. But as you look around the rest of the squad, you're just wondering, where are the match winners? Who's the player who's going to make a difference? And I know they're without Thomas Partey, but even as you look at the bench, you just wonder, who does Arteta really have to turn to outside of Lacazette, who ordinarily you can't rely too much on? So this, for me, two, in Premier League standards, average teams, middle-of-the-table teams, and it showed.
But it's 6 points, isn't it?
Yeah, completely.
And it's 6 points. He's staring, looking at the mirror in his house over the just before Christmas, and he couldn't see where the next point was coming from.
Yeah.
Couldn't see it, right? He could have looked through stats and data and everything. He couldn't see where it was coming from. He certainly didn't think it was coming from the Chelsea game, but it did. And to go back to what Robbo was saying, this new law change at times with being able to pass the ball out from a goal kick to a player in the box has almost made some of the teams insufferable to watch. I mean, some of these coaches can't get their centre-half close enough to the goalkeeper to take the ball, and they think they're going to open up from one end of the pitch to the other to score a goal. Now, Barcelona at the pomp might do it. Man City or Liverpool at the pomp might do it. But how many teams in the bottom half of the Premier League, yeah, right, are going to suck a team in, pass it from their own six-yard box and end up with a goal at the other end? Let's take Arsenal as an example. Arsenal couldn't have got much worse than how they were in the first half, right? Brighton weren't much better, but they were both trying to do the same thing. What worked for Arsenal in the second half? Quicker tempo in the passing, playing balls in behind over the top at times for wingers and front men to run onto, stretching Brighton. None of this tippy-tappy nonsense from your own goalkeeper. That's okay now and again, but to have to watch teams trying to do that almost every game, teams at the bottom of the Premier League who all of a sudden think they're Real Madrid and Barcelona, and that's how they're going to get out of a relegation fight, it's just utter nonsense. And we're seeing it quite a lot, not from every team. You know, what we're seeing from Aston Villa, we're seeing pace, we're seeing tempo, we're seeing physicality, we're seeing Ollie Watkins running in behind, we're seeing Grealish get on the ball. Yeah, they'll try and pass it, but they've got a shape and they've got a tempo to the team, and they've spent and recruited well. It's not difficult. And I think a lot of guys are trying to overcomplicate it. We saw this in the game today. Arsenal were much better in the second half. You're absolutely right about Saka. If I was Lacazette, I would be saying, unless he was injured, or just, I mean, he couldn't have been that tired. He hasn't played many games. That was the only thing I thought is, why was Aubameyang back in the side?
Yeah.
Why the rush to get Aubameyang back in this Arsenal team when, one, they'd beaten Chelsea, albeit 48 hours before, and two, Lacazette had got himself a goal, albeit from the penalty spot. And actually, he looked more of a threat through the middle when he came on. That was the only question I would have about Arsenal today.
Craig mentioned it, didn't he? There was one anomaly, really, that we saw today. Leeds with a 5-0 victory against West Brom. What a result. Big Sam, I imagine, on a rather angry mode. Goalless between Saints and West Ham. Burnley beating Sheffield
United. Horrible,
isn't it? One.
Yeah. It's horrible.
It is horrible. The matches, though, of course, continue on Wednesday.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Well, Barcelona end 2020 the way in which, and, well, we've kind of seen them play for the whole year. Pretty bang average. They're going to manage a 1-1 draw at home against Eibar. No Lionel Messi for this game. Coutinho and Dembele both starting on the bench. And no real spark once again from Koeman's side. As Sid Lowe joins us to reflect on Barca's final game of the year. Sid, so reflective, as I mentioned, of what we've seen so far, really.
Yeah, and I suppose from Barcelona's point of view, and obviously, look, I don't want to overextend the symbolism or trying to see things where they're not really there. But there was a certain symbolism, wasn't there, in the fact that this year ended with Lionel Messi turning and walking out on the stadium and walking out on his team. And he must still feel that that's one of the possibilities between now and the end of the season. He, of course, was unable to play because of an ankle injury. He was in the Camp Nou. At the final whistle, he turned and walked. Barcelona, as you say, were a familiar-looking Barcelona. A Barcelona who had some of the mistakes that they've had all the way through the year. Now, a lot has changed. Of course, this was a year that started with Valverde, that's had Kike Setién, now has Ronald Koeman. But this still feels like a Barcelona side that can't quite get right. In fact, if anything, it feels like a Barcelona side that's regressed since January of last year. Things were not this bad back then.
Sid, how could he not start Dembele? Or Coutinho, in fact, for a game like this, without Messi?
Well, I mean, Coutinho, I think I could probably understand it, given that he hasn't performed particularly well, and given that actually Pedri is one of the bright spots of this Barcelona side, and give Pedri the freedom to play behind the forwards in the kind of role that Coutinho might want to do. I can see a certain degree of logic in that. I guess, as you say, though, without Messi, then you would think Dembélé, although he is coming back from yet another injury. He made a big difference when he came on, but not enough of a difference. This is still a Barcelona side that feels I mean, I'm not really sure how to put this down, but it kind of feels dysfunctional. It feels like a side that doesn't really know its structure, doesn't really know how it wants to play, doesn't really know which players combine best with other players, that's making individual mistakes, that's making structural mistakes, that's making systemic errors as well. It's just all the way through this Barcelona team, it feels like they have really very, very significant problems.
You mentioned Lionel Messi in the stands for this tie. It's the first chance that we've had a chance to talk, Sid, since that exclusive interview, where once again Lionel Messi actually said stuff, and it was funny, wasn't it, looking at the contrast between the Madrid newspapers, where they focus on the fact that he was saying Barcelona is a mess, I would send that Verifax again, as opposed to the Catalonia newspapers that were saying, I'm much happier now, and you know what, there is a possibility that I might stay. Let's go for you for the neutral's point of view. Your big takeaway regarding Messi's future from that interview.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, my takeaway was that you could have got a piece of paper, drawn a line down the middle and written good news, bad news. And you could have filled both columns because there were elements, I think, that if you were looking for certain arguments, and of course most people were watching this looking for a clue, looking for a sense of being reinforced in their position, then I think you could reinforce both positions. Now let's start with, for example, the fact that he said that Koeman was a good sign, and the fact that he said that the summer was behind him now, that he talked about everything that had happened this summer in the past tense, that he talked about how he was happier now. All of that was great. And of course the fundamental thing in terms of the immediate news story from this was, I am not going to start negotiating with clubs now. In other words, he's not going in January ahead of time, and he's not going to make up his mind now. He's not going to start talking to clubs right now. So that was the good news. Of course, from the Barcelona fans' point of view, there was also that sense that he talked about Barcelona almost in the past tense as well. The fact that I think the most significant piece of actual news, the real revelation from this, was him saying for the first time, by the way, and I really don't think he has even hinted at this before, that he would like to play in the US at some point. That's the first time he said that. He's talked before about wanting to retire at Barcelona, or if not, who knows, maybe take the romantic option of going to play for Newell's. Now, although this may well be seen as a semi-retirement or a pre-retirement, the move to the US, that in itself was a change. The other things that were bad news, I think, from Barcelona's point of view, is when you listen to him talk, he talked about the need to win things, to compete for the Champions League, and yet he also talked, and this is the phrase he used, about a club that's in a very, very bad way. He was asked about the kind of signings that they needed to be a good team again, to go winning again. And he said, well, there's no money. Where's the money coming from? He was asked directly about Neymar. And he said, well, we can't afford Neymar. What do we pay to pay PSG with, Jiv? So obviously, as I say, so you've got these two sides of this. You've got the good news and bad news columns, and they're both quite full. My personal feeling listening to this was that this was Messi effectively postponing the decision. Postponing the decision to the end of the season. I genuinely think he's telling the truth when he says he doesn't know what he's going to do yet. But I think when you listen to him talk, I think you can see that in his own mind, at least, the reasons to go are very powerful ones. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to, but they are very, very powerful ones. And time is running out for him. And I think that's another key element in all this. So right now, I think it's not great news for Barcelona fans, but at least it's not as bad as it could have been. They could have expected him to be leaving in the next 3 weeks.
Obviously, January the 1st is when he can start negotiating. Just picking up the point that you made about money, it is, of course, being made clear that Barcelona would be a lot better off financially without Messi. Is it guaranteed that they're going to offer him a new contract? How does that bit work?
That's a very good question. And I think they absolutely will offer him a new contract. I think they have to. Because of everything that he symbolises. And also, by the way, let's not allow ourselves to be sucked purely into the argument about how much he symbolises. He's still the best player in this team. And by a very, very long way. You know, he is still a lot better than everybody else in this team. And he's still very, very important. But I also think there is an emotional and if you like, a kind of a symbolic need to offer him a new contract. Now, there is, though, a difference between offering him that new contract and offering him that new contract and being absolutely determined that come what may, he's got to sign this. That you absolutely need him to do this. And I think there may be some of those presidential candidates, and of course that's the other element in this, we don't know who the president will be, who will be thinking, you know, it might not be a terrible thing if he goes, not least because, of course, the blame for him going will be always put at the doorstep of Josep Maria Bartomeu, whoever the new president is. So the blame will be put on his doorstep, it will be put on Messi's doorstep, and probably not on the doorstep of the new president. So a new president may well feel, I can't really reconstruct until he goes, so it might not be a bad thing if he doesn't renew. Bear in mind one other element here. One of the reasons why Messi thought that he would be able to go in the summer is because he thought that deep down, even that old board of directors, deep down, did want him to go.
Think, Sid, 2021 is going to be all about me asking you every single day whether or not he's going to stay and where he's going to go. How exciting for everyone. Something to look forward to in the new year. Just a reminder, you can check out plenty of content over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to go over there and subscribe. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. I woke up this morning, Diego Costa was trending. Unfortunately, considering what it could have been, it was just the fact that Atleti have decided to terminate his contract as Atleti. Sid Lowe is still with us. Sid, why is this such a big story?
Well, first of all, I want to know how big a story it could have been. Could you perhaps give us a list of the ideas?
Look, we've all seen Costa boxing the Chelsea Costa's physio, the pranks that he's played on his brother. I thought it was going to be another one of those.
Well, I mean, I think this is a big story because it comes at a strange time. He was due to stay until the end of the season. This is him bringing an end to his contract 6 months early, which I suppose on the face of it isn't particularly significant. But this is an Atletico Madrid team that, of course, is in a good position to compete for the league title. I think for the probably in the best position they've been in, certainly since 2014 when they last won it, when, of course, Costa was there. I think actually he would have played, even though he's second choice to Luis Suarez at the moment. I think he would have had minutes. I think he would have had a contribution to make. And also, I suppose, the mysteriousness of the fact that this is a player who went away and came back, a player who's now going again, and who, according to Atletico Madrid, asked to be allowed to go for personal reasons. Now, this is something he asked for 3 days ago, and nobody saw coming.
Hmm. He's not going to take him to Milan, is he, Sid?
Well, look, it's curious this because obviously the fact that this was presented as personal reasons, and if you read Atletico Madrid's statement and also listen to what Diego Simeone said today, it's very interesting because he talked about this, I suppose, almost like a parent might, in that he said, you know, Costa came to us with this question and we've tried to help him. Right. We've tried to help him, which of course suggests that maybe there is some personal issue. So we've tried to help him so long as it doesn't have a detrimental effect on our competitiveness. Now, what that of course means is that Atletico Madrid do not want him to go to a direct competitor, either in the Champions League or in La Liga. So as we understand it, although of course this has to be confirmed publicly by the club, and to be honest with you, I suspect they will never confirm this publicly, Costa has signed an agreement that says, right, you leave for free. But if you do join one of those clubs that we see as a direct competitor, both in the La Liga and in the Champions League, and I suspect that those clubs are explicitly named in this agreement, then there will be a penalty paid, and we believe that penalty is in the region of 15 million euros.
Wow. It's quite a big penalty. Sid Lowe, thank you very much. Just a reminder, the action continues in Spain on Wednesday. Real Madrid playing their final game of 2020. They're away against Elche. Meanwhile, Atletico Madrid without Diego Costa at home against Getafe. Meanwhile, former Real Madrid coach Santi Solari has been hired as the surprise new coach of Club America. Go over to the website for all the latest news on that.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
The action continues on Wednesday in the Premier League. As we record this, Spurs against Fulham is on, as is Newcastle against Liverpool. We'll be discussing those matches on the next edition of the show. Craig back in studio with us. What a wonderful treat. Be sure to go and check out Extra Time over on our YouTube channel. As always, the boys there answering your tweets. But for now, thank you very much for being with us. Thanks to Craig, to Robbo, to Shaka and to Sid. Until then, goodbye. Welcome into Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Craig here, as is Frank. Not Frank, who is it? Robbo. Robbo's the other bold one. Robbo and Shaka here. Was Big Sam's plan all along to take points from the rich and give them to other newly promoted sides? What do you think caused West Brom's terrible dip in form today?
That's extraordinary. 4-0 well, down at half-time.
Yeah, I didn't see that game today because I was watching the Arsenal game. But listen, Leeds can do that to you. That's what Leeds are like. I saw them play at Everton and they were fantastic. I saw them play at United, and I mean, it was quite amazing today because if you go on social media, which you should never take as a barometer,
yep.
But all these people, and some of them journalists, a lot of them journalists and ex-players saying, oh, those that said Bielsa should change and blah, blah, blah. I don't think anybody said Bielsa should change, but he went to Man United and he got it completely wrong.
Yes.
By playing Phillips as a man marker on Bruno Fernandes and getting dragged all over the place. I do presume Calvin Phillips, who's a very good player, by the way, didn't have to man mark any West Brom players today or Everton players. So, they're really good to watch. But I don't know Sam Allardyce that well. I know him a little bit. But I'm imagining half-time would have been fun.
Yeah.
4-0.
4-0 down. After getting that great result at Anfield and all the plaudits, Robbo, it slightly went south, didn't it?
You obviously didn't see the first goal because we've been talking about playing it forward, making forward runs.
Yeah.
And the first goal, West Brom had lots of possession, had possession in not a particularly good area, but the ball should have been played forward. They had forward runners and the midfield player turned back and tried to pass it to his goalkeeper who had made an angle off at the side. The ball goes straight in the net early on in the game. And from that moment on, they were all over the place, West Bromwich Albion, and Leeds played well.
We talked about that show actually on ESPN Plus. Check that out today. Shaka tells us who to blame.
The boy from West Brom that did that, I've told you this story, haven't I? I did that playing for Chelsea reserves.
Did you?
But I wasn't a midfielder going back. I told you this. Glenn had said to me he wants to play me at sweeper.
Right.
In the next Premier League game. So he said,
yes.
So he said Monday night at Kingstonians, it's where the reserves used to play, I don't know if it's there. He said, Monday night at Kingstonians, go down, play for an hour at sweeper, because at Blackburn or wherever it was at the weekend, I'm going to play you sweeper and you can come out passing the ball. And I did what that West Brom player did today. Passed it back without looking and straight into the net. And
beautiful.
On Saturday, I was not playing sweeper.
That was your sweeper roll over?
No, I did play it again for Ruud Gullit once, but I didn't try and win the back passes. But I have done that, yeah.
Robbo, has Theo Hernandez been a better player at left-back this season than Andy Robertson and Alphonso Davies?
Well, Alfonso Davies has been injured for quite a while, so Teo Hernandez has been excellent. He's starting to show that he can defend as well. Andy Robertson's still the best attacking fullback in world football, I'd imagine, at left back. So I wouldn't say he's been the best, but Teo Hernandez has been the second best, and he's been excellent for Milan. And his defensive play has been such an improvement this season. It's been unbelievable.
Ask Craig why he's being such a hypocrite about the situation Lampard has put himself in. He was all over Solskjaer last season, rambling on about him not being up to the task due to a few bad results in a row. Rambling, Craig?
How am I a hypocrite over Lampard?
I suppose a lot of people suggest that you're much nicer to Lampard than you are Solskjaer.
Well, that was the end of the season, no? And I don't believe we're even halfway towards the end of the season. So, and the fact is, for Lampard, it's a bit of an unknown management for him. It's his second full job, second full time job. He's only been a couple of years in management. Solskjaer's been in management for over a decade. Right, there was nothing in his CV to suggest he should get that job. And if Chelsea don't make the top four, Lampard's going to have to go.
Right.
So there's no hypocrisy, apart from those idiots out there that think there is. It's just that Lampard had a transfer ban. Now he's under pressure because he's had money to spend. The players are not playing well, particularly Werner, Havertz and Ziyech is injured. And if he doesn't turn that round, he won't be in the job. So there is no bias. We just haven't got to the end game yet, and the end game will come pretty soon. Put it one way, and I was saying to you earlier, if he has a bad January, he could be gone.
Right.
I mean, Abramovich has got more patience than he had years ago. He would sack somebody after a couple of bad results, out. He's got more patience than he had, but he hasn't got a lot. He's got a little bit more than me, a little bit less than me.
He's got a bit more money than you.
So there's no bias apart from in Mikel's head. It's just Solskjaer, I don't think, is up to the job. Although they're second in the table, I think I'll be proved right. And we have yet to find out whether Frank Lampard can steer this ship. And things are starting to take a bad turn for the worse of late. But
yeah, they had rock bottom was obviously the Arsenal result, Robbo. Yep. He needs cohesion, doesn't he, within that side?
He certainly does. He needs them to be tougher as well, mentally, because they've got too many characters inside. Thiago Silva is meant to be the character at the back. But just going back to Craig's point, he brought all these players in. These were going to be the players that were going to take Chelsea to the next level, and none of them have performed. I never thought Kai Havertz would perform because I'd seen him in the Bundesliga, and every time I did him, I'm thinking, I'm not sure he's the player that everybody says he is. Timo Werner, I've been disappointed by him, but I thought he would play through the middle rather than out on the left-hand side. And Ziyech has been injured. Mm. But they were the players that were going to come in along with Pulisic to play down the left-hand side that were going to take Chelsea to the next level. He hasn't had those players at their best, or he hasn't been able to get the best out of them, and he's still relying on either Tammy Abraham or Giroud, who I think neither of them are good enough to win the title for Chelsea.
Well, Kai Havertz played a lot as a striker for Peter Boss at Leverkusen. Not all the time, but quite a bit. But he's only a young man, and I said this to you, he's had COVID, so that knocked him back a bit. But even before that, he was looking a little lost. And it's almost like, I mean, there's time for it to change at Chelsea. Mm-hmm. And it'll have to change, because you may have noticed the owner doesn't suffer spending money.
Apparently his patience.
However, Kai Havertz to me seems to me like the player that Chelsea didn't really need. But because he was flavour of the month young guy in Germany, they went out and got him anyway.
Yeah.
But that just gives you, it gives you options, but it gives you more problems when an owner is saying, well, hold on a minute, we've spent all this money in these players, we're not getting results and you're not using them. So at the moment, that's more of a problem than it is a positive for Lampard.
Shaka, who is the most biased member of the cast? My money is on Jules, who seems to spend 85% of the show complimenting French players.
Me.
You're biased. You're anti-Manchester United, we know that.
Yes.
Stevie is pro-Liverpool, Liverpool TV, as Craig called him last week sometime. But that's understandable, given Stevie's connection with Liverpool. Other than that, I don't think anybody has a favoured team. And you know, I don't think anybody cuts anybody any slack that they don't for anybody else.
Shaka, the only side that I've seen you're really passionate about is Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah, and the rest are just, I used to play for them, I'm a fan, but I'm not going to lose sleep if they lose.
Do you know who the most biased people are? Are the people tweeting in because they're fans of a team?
Well, of course, yeah.
They're biased about their team and they can't see it any other way. Don Hutchinson. He's not here to defend himself.
But that won't stop you.
That's not stopping me. Slapping him around. Don tried to shoehorn Fabinho into Mark Ogden's team of the year at centre-half.
Yeah.
When Augie correctly reminded him that he's probably only played there 6, 7, 8 times during the year. He also anointed Liverpool league champions last week when I was trying to tell him City are probably going to be their biggest challengers once they get up and running. He said the league's over. Look who Liverpool have got to play in the next two games. West Brom and somebody else. I couldn't get it in his head.
I would say, Dan, I could be the most biased when it comes to goalkeepers. I hate goalkeepers. I think they're overprotected.
Oh, my God.
Prima donnas. I never liked them when I was coaching. I didn't like them when I was a player. I'm biased against goalkeepers. I'll say
right
that.
There with you. I'm not sure you're more biased than Stevie against goalkeepers.
We know you're anti-Arsenal, though, Robbo.
No, certainly not anti-Arsenal.
You got sacked from Arsenal TV. That's as anti-Arsenal as it gets.
Oh, listen, Jules is...
No, I resigned from Arsenal TV because I wasn't able to say what I wanted to say. So I resigned, actually.
Well, let me give this a technicality. You don't actually resign, you just don't go back. Right, Jules is... He's not here to defend himself either, but he's going to get it.
Right.
He can't see past Neymar.
No, he loves Neymar.
He loves Neymar.
Neymar's having a big New Year's Eve party, isn't he?
Is he going?
500 people are going.
Is he?
Sounds great.
Yeah, that's great with the COVID and all that. Yeah, and you come. Sounds... 500 people. Shaka's biased against dress clothes.
Yeah, just Shaka's... anything with a collar.
And an iron. He's biased against anything that needs iron.
Shaka, what's happened to you?
Nothing. I'm home.
I remember when you used to come in this studio, you had the old pocket chief in and everything, shirt and all that.
I'm coming into the studio tomorrow.
I'll wear a shirt. I'll defend you, Shaka.
What do you have on your lower
half,
Shaka? What's that? What's underneath?
Oh, don't.
No,
number
not
36.
No, you're...
That's as low as it's going, Dan. That's as low as it's going.
He's doing this show and he's underpants.
I hope there is.
He's doing this show and he's underpants.
I hope there are.
That's the first ever.
Robbo, go on, mate. Sorry.
I was going to say, I will defend Shaka. I think it was a couple of weeks ago, it was the smartest I've ever seen anybody on the show in the studio. And I think he had a lilac tie, he had a nice suit on, he looked $1 million.
Yeah, that was it. That was the one for the year.
Cheers, Robbo. Thanks, Robbo.
For
especially
Robbo,
given how much you hate goalkeepers, I know how much it took out of you to see that.
For Robbo, Shaka said
a lot
his...
of effort there.
Oh, my goodness. For Robbo, Shaka said his Christmas New Year gift would be a fully fit Antonio for West Ham. This was the most ridiculous answer we've had in extra time for a long time, because Shaka was asked, you know, if he could have anyone for West Ham, who would he have? And he said a fit Antonio. Would you like West Ham to go and find a new striker in January, Robbo?
Well, Antonio, if he's fit, is a good striker for them, particularly when they're playing on the counter-attack, which David Moyes likes to do. Haller's not done particularly well, so yes, I think they need a new striker. They need somebody better than Haller and somebody that's not as injured as much as Antonio. So a striker would be a good signing for West Ham. A good one, though.
Robbo, has Saka been the best young talent so far in the Premier League? Seems to be that he's the only one carrying Arsenal forward.
I'm trying to think of other young players that have been brilliant this season in the Premier League, but Saka springs to mind, obviously. Yeah. Again, tonight he showed that he could go past people with pace. He's been played in several different positions, so he's played at left wing back, he's played at left-sided attacking player. Today he was on the right-hand side. He's been outstanding in most of the games that he's played, and he's got that pace to run past people, and he's got a good appetite to work as well. So he's been Arsenal's best player over the course of this season.
Curtis Jones.
Along with Tierney.
Curtis Jones.
Liverpool.
Leeds midfielder, how old is he?
Calvin Phillips.
He's
24, but he's a good player. James Justin at Leicester, their fullback's been excellent for them. They've had some problems there. It's been a lot of good. I mean, Declan Rice again at West Ham, still a young player, been pretty solid in there. There's been quite a lot, but he, you know, he's an England international now, Saka, so he's playing not only for his club, but he's playing for potentially a place in the England squad for the Euros. I mean, it's not out. He's got a lot of choice to make, Gareth Southgate, but he's potentially one of them.
Shaka, which former pro on the show would you most like to have played with?
I'm going to go with Stevie. Is Stevie the only player who's won Player of the Year?
Yeah, Frank won a World Cup.
I think that's what I'll go with.
Yeah?
The Player of the Year.
Player of the Year, Steve Nicol.
In 89 or whatever year it was.
Well...
Oh, what are you bringing now? No, wait, it goes, Scottish Player of the Year is going to be brought
I did win the Football Writers in Scotland. Are you diminishing Scottish football there, Shaka?
There it is.
Yeah, another one that hates it.
No, my apologies, Craig, I didn't know.
Oh, yes, 1998. Is it just because I scored against you that you don't like me?
Well, that's one of the reasons.
I came across a video on YouTube. Don't know where it came up.
Who would you want to play with?
you have saved in your favourites.
Who would you want to play with?
I played with Don.
Yeah, Don's not on the top of anyone's list.
What an easy target he is. If you want to come on a show with anybody that will change his mind and crack under the first bit of questioning, there's Don.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Don was...
Frank you played with as well?
Oh, yeah, I played with LeBeouf at Chelsea for a year. Played with Frank, played with Don, played against Stevie towards the end of his career when he was at Sheffield. Played against Shaka and scored.
Right.
Never played against Robbo because he was a wee bit too old for me.
Yes.
And he was always injured.
Yeah.
Like me. And we used to go to the same physio.
Oh, God, Princess Diana's story we mentioned again. Let me hear that.
Robbo? Oh, here we go. Yes. What would you like to say, Dan? What was your question there?
Who would you want to play with?
Who would I want to play with? Well, it wouldn't be Shaka because obviously I don't like goalkeepers.
Yep.
I'd like to have formed a central midfield partnership with Craig Burley.
Wow.
I'd have done all the
draft
and the running forward, and Craig could have got on the ball and made us tick, and I think that would have been a good combination.
Yeah, it would have been a good combination in the treatment room with your knees and back and my back. Oh, my God.
Oh, that'd be nice.
It's no fun being injured, you know.
Well, what a shock. Thank you very much for that.
Rehabbing is horror. It's so hard.
Right.
Good. Like working with you. And like for Shaka, it's like dressing up.
Right.
It's difficult.
Final question for you, Shaka. How many goals do you think you would be at fault if it was a 9-9 draw? This, of course, a conversation that's been going on the last couple of days. Stevie saying he'd prefer to watch a 0-0 than a 9-9.
If it's a 9-9 draw, I think you could realistically blame the goalie for two.
Yep.
Maybe three.
Shaka, you're really taking this question seriously.
Yes, I gave it some thought.
Robbo, what would you prefer to watch, a 0-0 or a 9-9?
A 9-9, of course, you'd want to see goals. You don't want to see a 0-0 like we thought we were going to watch between Manchester United and Wolverhampton Wanderers and Brighton against Arsenal. That was shocking.
Yeah.
So a 9-9 would do.
Does he forget what he says the day before?
Well, yes, of course he does.
Oh, of course he does. Yeah. Is he like, you know, 0-0s with Mourinho and Tottenham, he hates them.
No, right, he said 9-9 would be terrible because defensively it would be a shambles. So he'd just walk out.
He'd walk out, but it makes him angry.
It would make him angry. That'd be it. It'd be gone. It'd be throwing his phone at everyone. That is it. We are done. Thank you very much, as always, for your tweets. We are with you right through the holiday period. Be sure to join us tomorrow. It's me and you tomorrow, isn't it?
Stay biased.
Stay biased. You hate United. You hate United.